We have all heard claims, I think, that consumerism and overconsumption are gobbling up resources and harming the planet, and therefore we have to emphasize reducing consumption. But what if we could emphasize showing people how to achieve a happy life, and that would have the incidental effect of reducing consumerism and saving the planet? Dr. Miriam Tatzel, a professor of psychology at Empire State College in New York, presented these ideas at this year's American Psychological Association convention based upon studies in positive psychology. And she joins us now on the phone to tell us her ideas. Dr. Tatzel, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Oh, thank you very much. Hello.
I hope I haven't mischaracterized too badly, but at least it'll get us started on this interesting subject.
Oh, no, I think you did a good job of explaining the problem about consumerism and the environment.
Sure. And your specialty is positive psychology. Can you tell us what that is and how does it differ from other types of psychology?
Well, it's part of psychology. Mm-hmm. It's about really focusing the study of happiness and well-being and quality of life, and it applies to individual as well as larger groups, communities, nations. So it's looking at the positive side of life.
I
focused on consumer well-being.
So you're looking at what does it take to make someone happy? I mean, basically, what elements of life contribute to happiness and what doesn't? So what does a study of positive psychology tell us about what does create true happiness?
Well, I've looked at what a number of different theorists and researchers have done, and I've put together my own little way of remembering it, and it's how to be a happy camper. And looking at camper...
We're familiar with that up here, yes.
You know, that the things that we need, the basic psychological needs, are for competence, autonomy, you know, that we are the ones who are living the life we want to live, our personal growth, you know, being in the driver's seat, that's competence, autonomy, meaning is the next one, that the life, our life matters and what we're doing matters. P, it's a pleasurable life, meaning that our positive emotions outweigh the negative. That engagement, that we're engaged in what we do, we're into our activities. And last but not least, relationships, having good, warm relationships with others. These are components of a good life.
So those elements, and competency, tell me a little bit more about what do you mean by competence?
That we have skills, things we can do, that we are able to master our environment and function in it.
Mm-hmm. And how did you decide to link the study of positive psychology and these elements of happiness as a way to basically improve the environment?
Well, I really started with trying to see whether these qualities of happiness, how can we be consumers in a way that would advance our well-being?
And so, okay.
Yeah, so that what I wanted to look at was to gather together what do we know about well-being as a consumer, and then for each of these qualities to ask, what are the implications for the environment? As you have said, that there's so much damage to the environment for the sake of consumerism. Does all this consumerism really benefit us? Is it worth it? And so if we looked at it the other way around and saying, well, what's good for the consumer and how would that affect the environment? And that's what I had focused on, these different qualities that
so,
I can talk about.
So how does the pursuit of true happiness conflict with materialism and consumerism in our society and how we're sold on consumerism? How does that conflict with the pursuit of true happiness?
Well, I would say one of the main qualities of people who are happier is that they're not especially materialistic. That people who have strong material values are often found to be less happy than the non-materialistic type.
And what kind of studies do you base that on?
Well, this then to try to explain why that should be the case. Mm-hmm. Is that One is that people who are materialistic often have very great material desires, and that there's a gap between what, if there's a gap between what you have and what you want, the larger that gap is, the more dissatisfied you are with your current circumstances. And then, if you have these desires for more and, say, luxury goods, that when you get these, when you get that great new car or whatever, there's a real boost in happiness, but then several months later, you wind up being more or less back to where you were, and you're thinking about what is the next acquisition you can have. And that's called the hedonic treadmill. Hedonic meaning pleasure and treadmill. Well, you know, it's like the, you're going in circles and you're not really getting very far. And so that kind of grouping of the have-want gap, getting adapted and getting kind of used to the nice things that you have, and then wanting to have more nice things becomes insatiable. And if you try to satisfy these needs by getting into debt or buying things impulsively, then you can wind up being in financial difficulties, which then increases unhappiness.
And these are sort of things we kind of intrinsically know, or at least, you know, we're certainly taught these things in the basic world religions. Mm-hmm. And you're basically reaffirming that with psychological data, studying, showing that, you know, things don't make you happy, or especially obsession with things doesn't make you happy.
Yes, you know that... When you ask people, you know, about is money going to make you happy or are riches going to make you happy, they'll say, no, those aren't the most important things in life. But as there was one paper with a great title, if money doesn't make us happy, why do we act as if it does?
Exactly.
And many people would agree with the statement, well, if I had a little more money, I might be a little more happy.
Yeah, right, and that's an interesting the segue into the what I read in your material here about income level. When does income level cease making you happy? I mean, how much money do you need to be happy? I guess that's my question.
Okay, you know, the answer is, does money make you happy? Well, yes and no. If you're poor, then increases in money really do have a significant effect in making you happier in your life. But money has diminishing returns. And, you know, the study that was done, I mean, sort of 5 years ago, is sort of a ballpark figure that your increase in happiness, but once you reach about $75,000 a year, then more money doesn't make you feel better. Mm. Now, it is true that more money will make you able to do more in life, you might feel more satisfied, but in terms of emotions and feeling well, money has its limits.
How did they study that? I mean, how did they reach that conclusion?
Well, you can see that...
I mean, did you just ask people?
You do ask people, and you compare different cultures as well, and seeing people's income level and how happy they are.
And so, okay.
Yeah.
We're speaking right now with Dr. Miriam Tatzel from Empire State College in New York State, whose specialty is consumer psychology and positive psychology, and the idea that it can have an effect on overconsumption and damage to the environment.
So if we say that low materialism is better for personal well-being, and is that better for the environment? Yes, because mm-hmm. anything that would really dampen consumerism would be positive for the environment.
And I wonder, you know, going back to the conclusion about being poor is a sort of a damper on happiness. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that is true in all societies or only those that have the option of a lot of money. In other words, if you're raised in a society that everybody's poor or there's very little difference between income ranks, is it the jealousy of the person who has more that makes you less happy when you're poor?
Well, people do assess their wealth in relative terms, that is, in compared
sure.
to others. So if you were living with in a community where everybody is more or less on the same level, even if you're not rich, then you can still be happy. It's when you compare yourself to those who are way ahead of you, if those are your neighbors mm-hmm. or those are your family, then you don't feel so good.
But that's almost a counseling matter too. I mean, if you had a counselor or a therapist working with you, they might say, well, you know, those things aren't really that important. Here's what's really important. And can you give us examples of what things people should do to achieve real happiness rather than buying another car?
Well, one of the things is to focus more on increasing what you do in a positive way, your activities. That is, if you, you know, join a health club or a book club or go on a diet or spend more time with your children or things that are things that you do, those things will have lasting effects as compared to if you got a new car or if you got a raise, that the boost that you get from those things tends to dissipate over time. So 3 months later, you're kind of feeling like you did before.
It's sort of like setting reasonable goals and base those goals on the things you were talking about, competence and autonomy and positive relationships, and just set some goals for those things.
Yes,
and you'll be happier than setting the goal of being richer.
That's right, because those the intrinsic goals that have to do more with personal growth and interpersonal and helping to make the world a better place, those tend to lead to more basic satisfaction than wanting to be rich or wanting to be famous.
And how would doing those things help the environment?
Well, I had mentioned low materialism. Another quality that is good for personal well-being is to be thrifty, to have good ability to manage money, and it also includes making good use of resources, not wasting, so that being thrifty, being frugal is is a skill that you have. It's a way of avoiding all the negatives of debt. And would being thrifty be better for the environment?
Of course, yeah.
Of course,
that was an interesting statement in the material I read here. Frugal people are happier people. That's pretty interesting.
Overall, there are real what you would call hedonic benefits, pleasurable benefits.
Yeah.
From being frugal.
Sure. I guess we don't have to even go into what are the things that people do that are detrimental to happiness in the environment. It's obsessive consumerism and materialism and overconsumption and those sorts of things. But now, how difficult is it going to be if we're all convinced about this, or you and I are convinced about this, and we want to convince folks that materialism will not give them happiness, when all the advertisements tell them that the opposite, and then when company profits are driven by how many widgets they can sell to you, that's a tough battle, isn't it?
I think it is a tough battle. I think what I've come across is kind of an observation that these qualities that are better for people as consumers also tend to be better for the environment. But, you know, what happens next? You know, if people really did start consuming less and being more careful about how they spent their money.
Sure. Have you had any reactions from any other psychologists or compatriots about your ideas here and what can be done about it? Or do you have ideas on what you can do now that you've reached these conclusions?
Well, you know, I was curious about that. You know, I presented this this information at the American Psychological Association in a session on consumer well-being, and the person who also presented with me had done research showing that people who think that happiness is important and being materialistic will make you happy are really wrong in their predictions. And I guess, you know, trying to see where this fits economically is a little bit beyond.
Right.
But you know, we usually measure the well-being of the society as the gross domestic product, and there are a lot of people who are working on alternatives to that. Alternative measures of social and economic well-being that would include human well-being and environmental well-being.
It seems like I've read about a lot of studies on that line. I mean, you know, you always read these articles about the happiest people in the world are in Denmark or wherever they are. Mm-hmm. There are some way to measure that, and it's not gross domestic product.
Well, the World Database of Happiness that tries to keep track of these things, what's found in societies like Denmark and those that are happy is that people feel that the society is fair, you know, that it's a level playing field, and also that people trust one another, that if you feel like if you had dropped your wallet in the street, you'd be confident that somebody would return it.
Mm-hmm. And I assume income disparity is a negative factor. In other words, if you have this huge difference
that wide income disparity, countries with lower income inequality tend to be happier, and interestingly, often work fewer hours. Some of the reasoning about this is that when there's a large income disparity, it gives you a measure of what is successful that is really out of reach for almost everybody.
Sure.
And it leads us to try to think that if we want to be successful, we have to hurry up, we have to work harder, we have to work more hours.
And in part, that's true. I mean, that's true. I mean, if you look at the CEOs who make all these bundles of money, they're working all the time.
They may be working all the time, and you know we know that people do that. But then, what are you losing when you work?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That ideal doesn't make you happy.
What you're losing is a chance to work on your own personal development, the things that matter to you, and what you're losing is the time that you might be spending with your friends and family.
Exactly, I agree with you.
And it's the interpersonal relationships and the self-development that are fulfilling.
Yes. Well, it's really been a pleasure to talk to you about this, and
hey,
I'm wondering, where is there a website or anything that you would recommend going to learn more about this, or just watch for more news on these studies in the future?
Well, one psychologist, Martin Seligman, has a website called Authentic Happiness. And it's even interactive in that there are different kinds of questionnaires that you can assess what your own strengths and values are.
Oh, that's an excellent site for people. I mean, people are always taking crazy tests on Facebook and that sort of thing. Well, this would be a meaningful one to take. Is there anything else you would like to add, Dr. Tatzel, at this point?
I think that we've covered things very nicely.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. An extremely interesting subject. I hope you can promote it well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.